A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's one of those prompts that sneaks up on you. It starts with a tool belt and a cargo strap, and before you know it, you're deep in the economics of air freight. Here's the setup. He's in the middle of an apartment move, orders a few supplies from AliExpress, stuff that's either impossible to find locally in Israel or absurdly overpriced, and instead of the usual month-long sea freight purgatory, everything shows up in under a week.
Less than a week. That's the detail that got me. I remember when ordering anything from China to the Middle East was an exercise in patience and prayer. You'd place the order, forget about it, and then 6 weeks later, a battered package would show up looking like it had personally circumnavigated the globe, which, in fairness, it basically had.
And the question underneath Daniel's prompt is, what changed? Alibaba's logistics arm, Cain Yao, has built a dedicated supply chain into Israel, and Daniel's hunch is that the volume has crossed some threshold where it now makes sense to lease dedicated cargo aircraft, not just piggyback on passenger flights. So he's asking, what's the minimum volume that tips the calculus? Is the 747 the only game in town for cargo, or are there smaller aircraft in the mix? Narrow-body freighters? Airbus conversions? Does the model even work with anything smaller than a wide body?
This is a genuinely fun puzzle, because we can't get the exact answer. Alibaba's never going to publish their Israel route logistics, but we can reverse engineer it from the economics, and the economics are fascinating.
Where do we start?
Let's rewind to what the old model looked like, because the contrast is what makes the new one so striking. And I think it's worth really sitting with how bad the old model was, because it makes the shift feel less incremental and more like a phase change. The old model was pure sea freight. A container ship from Shanghai or Ningbo to the port of Ashdod takes about 3 to 4 weeks on the water, plus another week or two for customs clearance, unloading, and last-mile sorting. So you'd order a tool belt on AliExpress, and it would show up 30 to 45 days later, if it showed up at all, because a lot of this was untracked. And untracked in this context means the tracking number stops updating the moment the package leaves the origin sorting center in Shenzhen. After that, it's a black box for a month.
Then maybe it arrives. Maybe you just gave $12 to the void. Model. I've lived that model. I once ordered a set of hex wrenches that took so long to arrive, I had forgotten I ordered them. And when they showed up, I thought someone had sent me a gift.
From AliExpress's perspective, that model had a brutal hidden cost. When delivery takes 6 weeks, customers cancel orders, they file disputes, they never come back. The shipping cost per kilo was almost nothing, pennies, but the friction was enormous. Lost sales, cash tied up in inventory floating somewhere in the Indian Ocean, zero visibility. Customer service costs alone were probably eating whatever they saved on freight.
You're saving on freight and bleeding everywhere else. It's the classic Pennywise, pound foolish problem, except the pounds are customer trust and repeat purchases.
Now, fast forward to what Daniel experienced. Cain Yao, which is Alibaba's logistics arm, has built a dedicated air freight pipeline into Ben Gurion Airport. They consolidate orders at Chinese hubs, fly them to a regional distribution center, and then last mile delivery is handled by local partners, Israel Post, various courier services. Total time, 5 to 7 days. Daniel mentioned that some of his orders arrived in 4 days, which is faster than a lot of domestic e-commerce in smaller countries.
The thing is, this isn't a premium shipping option. This is the default for a growing share of AliExpress orders to Israel. You're not checking a pay extra for air freight box. The platform is just routing your order through the fast pipeline automatically.
Which tells you the economics have fundamentally shifted. The core question Daniel's asking is, at what volume does it make sense to stop buying space in passenger plane bellies and instead lease a whole dedicated freighter? Because belly freight is cheap, you're just paying the marginal fuel and handling cost for space the plane already has. But it's unpredictable. You're at the mercy of passenger flight schedules, cargo hold dimensions, and route availability. For a route like China to Israel, passenger flights are limited and the belly space is inconsistent. One day there's capacity, the next day there isn't, and your packages sit on a pallet in a warehouse for 3 days waiting for the next available flight.
The threshold question is basically, how many tool belts and cargo straps do you need to be shipping every day before it's cheaper to just get your own plane? Or at least lease one exclusively?
That's it. And to answer that, we need to look at what aircraft actually fly cargo, what they can carry, and how far they can go. Because the 747 is the icon, but it's not the whole story. In fact, for most of the routes that matter to e-commerce, the 747 is probably the wrong aircraft. Let's start with the workhorses. The 767-300F carries 52 tons of payload with a range of about 6,000 kilometers. That's not quite enough to fly non-stop from Shenzhen to Tel Aviv. You'd need a fuel stop, or more likely, you route through a hub. The 707F, on the other hand, carries 102 tons and has a range of around 9,000 kilometers. That thing can fly direct from Zhengzhou or Hangzhou straight into Ben Gurion without touching the ground. It's basically a flying warehouse.
The 777F is the long-haul non-stop option, and the 767F is the regional or hub feeder option. And the 767F is cheaper to operate per flight hour, but you pay for it in range and payload.
And then there's the 747-400F, 112 tons of payload, about 8,200 kilometers of range. It's the one everyone pictures when they think cargo. The hump, the four engines, the sheer scale of the thing. But here's the thing, for most e-commerce routes, the 747 is overkill. You need to be moving enormous volume to fill 112 tons every single day. For a market like Israel, 9.3 million people, that's probably more capacity than AliExpress alone can justify. You'd be flying a half-empty 747, and that's a fast way to lose money.
The 747 is the icon, but the 767 and 777 are the ones actually doing the work on routes like this. It's like how everyone pictures a semi-truck when they think long-haul freight, but most of the delivery vans on the road are sprinters and transits.
That's a perfect analogy, and the threshold where dedicated freighters start making sense is roughly 50 to 80 tons per day on a given route. Below that, you're better off buying belly space on passenger flights. It's cheaper per kilo, even with the unpredictability. Above that threshold, the math flips. You're paying for the whole aircraft, but you control the schedule, you fill it to capacity, and your per unit cost drops below what you'd pay a freight forwarder for fragmented belly space. The break-even point isn't just about weight, though. It's about density of demand. If your 50 tons are spread across 7 days, you're still better off with belly freight. If they're concentrated into daily spikes, the dedicated freighter starts looking attractive.
Daniel's question about narrow-body freighters, do those even exist, and do they matter here? Because I think a lot of people, when they hear cargo plane, picture something with two aisles and four engines. They don't picture a converted 737.
They absolutely exist, and they're the fastest-growing segment in cargo aviation. The 737-800 BCF, that's Boeing converted freighter, carries 23 tons with a range of about 3,300 kilometers. Airbus has the A321P2F, 27 tons, at about 3,500 kilometers of range. Amazon Air runs a massive fleet of 737-800 freighters for their regional U.S. network. If you've ever gotten an Amazon package in 2 days, there's a decent chance it spent some time in a converted 737.
3,300 kilometers isn't getting you from China to Israel.
Not even close. The direct Great Circle distance from Shenzhen to Tel Aviv is about 7,700 kilometers. A narrow body can't make that leg. But here's where the hub-and-spoke model gets interesting, and this is where I think the real cleverness of Kanyao's setup reveals itself. They operate a major logistics hub in Dubai South. That's the massive logistics district next to Al Maktoum International Airport. The most likely setup is this, a wide-body freighter. Probably a 777F or 767F flies from Shenzhen or Zhengzhou to Dubai, fully loaded with consolidated e-commerce cargo for the entire Middle East region. Then from Dubai, the Israel-bound freight gets split off. That last leg to Tel Aviv could be belly freight on one of the dozens of daily passenger flights, or it could be a narrow-body freighter if the volume justifies it.
It's like a relay race where the baton is a pallet of tool belts.
That's the model. And it's elegant because it consolidates volume from multiple markets, UAE, Saudi Arabia, Israel, maybe even parts of North Africa, onto a single daily wide-body flight out of China. Without that consolidation, none of those markets individually would generate enough volume to fill a 777F every day. With it, you're running a full aircraft and the economics work beautifully. You're essentially creating a virtual mega market by bundling several medium-sized markets together.
Which means the real innovation here isn't the aircraft, it's the hub. The Dubai South facility is what makes dedicated air freight viable for a market the size of Israel. Without it, Israel is an island. With it, Israel is just one stop on a regional distribution network.
That's the part most people miss. Everyone focuses on the plane, but the hub is where the economics actually happen. Kainyao doesn't even need to own the aircraft. They lease capacity from cargo airlines like Atlas Air or China Cargo Airlines on long-term contracts. They get priority access without the capital expenditure of buying a fleet. The hub is the asset they control. The sorting facility, the automation, the customs pre-clearance infrastructure, that's what they've actually built. The planes are just a service they subscribe to.
That's a subtle but important distinction. They're not an airline. They're a logistics platform that happens to use aircraft as one input among many.
And that's the same playbook Amazon used. Amazon Air doesn't own most of the planes they fly. They lease them and contract the operations to cargo airlines. What Amazon owns is the network design, the sortation centers, and the data that tells them where demand is concentrated.
We know the aircraft and the hub model. But what does this actually mean for someone like Daniel, standing in a hardware store in Jerusalem, looking at a tool belt that costs 3 or 4 times what he just paid on AliExpress?
That's where the knock-on effect get brutal for local retail. Let's put real numbers on Daniel's tool belt. On AliExpress, $8 for the belt, maybe $5 for shipping, $13 total, delivered to his door in under a week. That same belt in an Israeli hardware store? $35 to $40.
It's not like the local retailer is gouging. They've got inventory carrying costs, warehousing, commercial rent, staff, VAT structured differently than a direct from China shipment. Their cost structure is just fundamentally different. They're not being greedy. They're being asked to compete with a logistics network that operates on a completely different cost curve.
But here's the problem for that retailer. The consumer doesn't care about your cost structure. They see $13 in 5 days versus $40 in maybe 2 days. At a 3-to-1 price ratio, those 2 extra days of waiting evaporate as a competitive advantage. The air freight threshold we talked about, that 50 to 80 tons per day, that's the aircraft economics. But the retail disruption threshold is lower. The moment air freight gets reliable enough and cheap enough that the total landed cost is still a fraction of local retail, entire product categories tip. And they tip fast.
The categories that tip first are exactly what Daniel described. Tools, hardware, home goods, electronics accessories. Things where Chinese manufacturing already has a structural 3 to 5 times cost advantage and where the weight-to-value ratio makes air freight viable. Nobody's air freighting bags of cement, but a tool belt, a set of drill bits, a cargo strap.
A cargo strap is heavy-ish, but cheap to manufacture. If you're shipping it by sea, the freight cost per unit is negligible, but the weight is forever. If you ship it by air at $3 to $5 per kilo, you need the retail price gap to absorb that. And for tools and hardware, it absolutely does. A kilo of tool belts might be 3 or 4 units. At $5 shipping per kilo, you're adding maybe $1.25 per belt. The local retailer is charging a $25 premium. The math is not subtle. It's not even a close call.
It's the kind of math where you don't need a spreadsheet. You can do it in your head while standing in the aisle.
And that's the terrifying thing for local retail. This isn't a marginal advantage. It's an order of magnitude difference in landed cost for the same product from the same factory.
The minimum viable volume for dedicated air freight on a route. You mentioned roughly 1,000 to 1,500 tons per month, which is 20 to 30 full 767F flights. Given Israel's 9.3 million people, and the fact that every contractor Daniel talks to is ordering from AliExpress, that volume feels entirely plausible for a single platform.
And here's a fun fact to put that volume in perspective. A single 767F can carry about 52 tons, which is roughly the weight of 35 to 40,000 tool belts, depending on the exact model. If Israel has 9.3 million people, and even a fraction of them are ordering from AliExpress regularly, you're filling multiple 767Fs per month without breaking a sweat. The volume threshold isn't some distant theoretical target. It's probably already been crossed.
That's a great way to visualize it. A single flight is tens of thousands of individual orders, and on a platform the size of AliExpress, that's a rounding error in their daily global volume.
Here's something Kan Yao figured out that most Western retailers haven't. You don't need to own a single aircraft to make this work. They lease capacity from cargo airlines. Atlas Air, Kalita Air, China Cargo Airlines, on long-term contracts. They get guaranteed space, priority scheduling, and they avoid the capital expenditure of buying and maintaining a fleet. It's air freight as a subscription service. You pay a monthly fee for guaranteed capacity, and the airline handles everything else.
Which is the same playbook Amazon used with Atlas Air before they built out their own branded fleet. Lease first, prove the volume, then decide if ownership makes sense. It's the try before you buy approach to building an airline.
And the geopolitical angle makes it even more interesting. Israel is perfectly positioned as a spoke from a Dubai or Doha hub. A single 777F from Zhengzhou to Dubai can carry consolidated e-commerce for UAE, Saudi Arabia, Israel, maybe Bahrain, and Qatar. That flight lands, cargo gets split, and the Israel-bound portion hops to Tel Aviv, either as belly freight on one of the many daily passenger flights or on a narrow-body freighter if the volume justifies it. The flight from Dubai to Tel Aviv is about 3.5 hours, which is well within narrow-body range.
Israel benefits from being in a neighborhood with much larger markets. Without the UAE and Saudi volumes filling out that wide body, the dedicated freighter might not pencil out for Israel alone. It's a free rider problem, but in a good way.
That's the quiet truth of this model. Small to medium markets get air freight networks they couldn't support on their own because they're piggybacking on regional consolidation. Amazon does the same thing with their Bahrain hub serving the Gulf states. Dedicated freighters from Europe and India feed into Bahrain, then last-mile distribution fans out across the region. Israel isn't special in this regard. It's just a beneficiary of being geographically adjacent to much larger consumer markets.
For consumers, the upshot is that the AliExpress effect is no longer just about price. It's a logistics phenomenon. Fast, reliable delivery from China is systematically eroding local retail in every category where Chinese manufacturing has a structural cost advantage. The old model was cheap, but you'll wait a month. The new model is cheap, and it'll be here by Thursday.
Which raises a question local retailers need to be asking themselves right now. If you can't compete on price and the delivery gap has shrunk to 2 or 3 days, what exactly are you selling? The answer has to be something other than the product itself. Curation, expertise, instant availability for emergencies, service, and returns. But for a lot of hardware and home goods, those things don't matter enough to justify a 3x markup. Nobody needs expert advice to buy a cargo strap. They just need it to not break.
The hardware store where you can walk in and walk out with a tool belt in 5 minutes still has a place. But the hardware store that orders the same tool belt from the same Chinese factory marks it up 3 times and makes you wait 2 days for a special order. That store is in the crosshairs. They're not adding value. They're adding latency and cost.
If you're a small retailer in a market like Israel, the takeaway here is uncomfortable but useful. The categories that are getting hollowed out first are the ones where the math is most lopsided. High weight to value items where Chinese manufacturing already has a 3 to 5 times cost advantage. Tools, hardware, home goods, certain electronics accessories. If your business model is importing those same products, warehousing them, and selling at a markup, the air freight economics we just walked through are eating your lunch in real time. And they're not going to slow down.
The playbook for surviving that isn't to compete on price. You'll lose every time. It's to compete on something the container ship and the 777F can't deliver. Instant availability for when someone needs a drain steak at 8 p.m. on a Thursday. Curation. actually knowing which tool belt is worth buying, so the customer doesn't have to wade through 400 listings and fake reviews. Service, returns, advice, the things that don't fit in a cardboard box from Zhongzhou. If I'm buying a power tool, I might want to hold it in my hands before I commit. If I'm buying a drain snake because my sink is actively flooding, I'm not waiting 5 days for air freight.
That's a real business. It's just a different business than the one a lot of hardware stores built over the last 20 years. The ones who figure that out will be fine. The ones who keep ordering from the same catalog as AliExpress and marking it up 3 times. They're not competing with a website. They're competing with a logistics network that can land a cargo strap on their customer's doorstep for $13 all in. And that's not a fight they can win.
For consumers, the shift is simpler, but maybe bigger. The era of free shipping, slow delivery, as the default for cross-border e-commerce is ending on high-volume routes. The Kainiao model, hub consolidation, leased freighter capacity, local last-mile partners, is replicable. JD.com is building out something similar. Shein already runs its own air freight network for fast fashion. Expect more markets to get sub-7-day delivery from China as these networks densify.
That's the broader lesson I keep coming back to. The minimum viable volume for dedicated air freight is lower than most people assume. A single daily 767F flight, 52 tons, can serve an e-commerce market of 5 to 10 million people. That means medium-sized countries are now viable in a way they weren't a decade ago. Israel, the UAE, Chile, South Africa. These aren't markets that had to wait for some futuristic drone network. The economics already work with at least 767 and a regional hub. The future arrived while we were all arguing about whether drones would ever be practical.
The tool belt in Daniel's apartment move is a small thing, but it's sitting at the end of a supply chain that would have looked like science fiction 15 years ago. And the wild part is that it's already boring. It just shows up. You click a button, and 5 days later, a cargo strap is on your doorstep, and nobody thinks twice about it.
There's one question we haven't answered yet, and it might be the most interesting one. Does this model scale down further? Daniel's prompt was about Israel. 9.3 million people, high e-commerce adoption, perfectly positioned next to a major logistics hub. That's a sweet spot. But what about New Zealand? The Baltic states? Markets with 1 million or 2 million people, further from the big consolidation hubs. Does the math still work when you're a spoke without a convenient hub next door?
New Zealand's a tough one because there's no Dubai next door. You're consolidating volume for a market of 5 million people that's geographically isolated. The nearest major population center is Australia, and even that's a 3-hour flight. The hub economics get harder when your spoke is a 4-hour flight from the nearest place you can consolidate cargo.
But here's what changes the calculus. Narrow-body freighters are getting longer legs. The A320XLR, that's the extra-long-range version, is already flying in passenger configuration with a range of about 8,700 kilometers. Once someone develops a freighter conversion for it, and it's being actively discussed in the industry, you've got a 27-ton payload aircraft that can fly non-stop from parts of China to markets that currently need a wide-body or a hub stop. That changes the game for isolated markets.
The threshold drops again. A market that couldn't fill a 767F might be able to fill an A321 freighter twice a week. You don't need a hub if your aircraft can make the trip non-stop.
Twice a week with a 5 to 7 day delivery window is still competitive with local retail at a 3x price gap. We may be heading toward a world where air freight as a service is viable for any market with 1 million plus consumers. You don't need to fill a 707F every day, you need to fill the right aircraft at the right frequency. And the right aircraft is getting smaller, more efficient, and longer-legged every generation.
The tool belt's logistics network gets cheaper and more flexible every year. The hardware store's rent and staffing costs don't. That's the asymmetry that's going to keep squeezing local retail in every category where the product can fit in a box and survive a few days in transit.
That's the asymmetry that's going to reshape retail geography over the next decade. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The largest Eaton Fives court ever built outside the United Kingdom was constructed on Sakhalin Island in 1974, measuring 42 feet by 28 feet, roughly 15% larger than regulation, and was demolished just 3 years later to make room for a fish processing plant.
I have so many questions I know I'll never get answers to. Who built it? Why Sakhalin Island? Was there a thriving Eden Fives community in the Soviet Far East that history has forgotten?
The idea of a niche British public school sport flourishing briefly on a remote Russian island before being bulldozed for a fish plant is the most Hilbert fact we've ever had. It's perfect. This has been My Weird Props. If you enjoyed this episode, rate us 5 stars and tell a friend who orders too much from AliExpress. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.